Rumor has it Dante Olsen is still gaining tackles as we speak.
Welcome, everybody, to the R&R CatCast, a fan-based podcast focusing on Montana State athletics. We're two dudes named Ryan from the state of Washington talking about our dear Montana State. We hope you enjoy.
Welcome back, Bobcat fans. Tonight we have a special roundtable interview with the one and only Brooks Nuanez of Skyline Sports. Brooks, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing wonderful, guys. It's good. It's so great to hear you guys and your intros and your show. I love this. It's so fun.
Appreciate you taking some time to come on the show. We, you know, anytime we interview or talk to someone in Montana, we know it's an hour behind us, so we appreciate you coming on a little bit, probably later than you'd like it to be, but thanks again for coming on.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think the timing kind of sets the vibe, too. I mean, it definitely makes it a little bit more interesting than a lot of daily interviews. But overall, I'm super happy to be here.
Are you calling us out for our drinking habits?
No, I think I know you have kids, which plays. But the fact that you're drinking is also good. That's a positive. I think you're in the right spot.
All right. There we go. Well, I just want to say real quick, we're both, you know, big fans of you and Skyline Sports. Like we were talking about it before we started recording, just the candor you have on the when you are on with your Coulter, your brother, just talking football, man. We love to listen to that. You're one of our favorite people to listen to talk about Bobcat football.
Yeah, well, thank you. I appreciate it. You know, I'm in a lucky position to be able to see so much Bobcat football up close and personal. I mean, I have for the better part of, you know, going on five, this is fifth season, but the better part of 6 years. And that's, you know, that there's a lot of really, you know, I feel pretty privileged to have experienced that, but also I like sharing it. You know, I love sports. So it's been great that you guys could share that. And Skyline Sports has been a really fun journey. It's, you know, it continues to grow, be sustainable. Things that for us that we need and we're looking for out of the business, it gives us. And that's such a huge opportunity to be able to do something like that, especially kind of from the ground up and getting to work with my brother. So all those things are wonderful. So, super happy to be here.
Well, right on. I know like many miles between Spokane and Great Falls has been taken up by listening to just you and your brother. And I just want to say thanks for all the good stuff you do. Your photos on the online stuff are just fantastic. You just have that knack for catching the right player at the right time. I know I'm going to ask you some questions about that, but just good work over there, Brooks.
Yeah, thank you so much. Like I say, it's been so fun. It's there's been some really fun years recently. I know we're going to dive into some of those things. It's been the program has grown into such an interesting element in the state of Montana, in the Big Sky Conference, in the Western United States, and in all of college football. So it's been very interesting to be a part of and fun to capture. So yeah, I know we'll dive into that stuff. It'll be great.
Well, fellas, it's been a minute since we had our What Are We Drinking segment. And tonight we have a special treat. We actually have a sponsor from Shine Beer Sanctuary in downtown Bozeman. See, sanctuaries are among the most sacred places in the planet. Shine Beer Sanctuary is certainly one of the most sacred places in Bozeman. Shine has 30 rotating draft beers, offering flavors for any beer enthusiast. Located in 451 East Main downtown, Shine is also Bozeman's premier bottle shop with hundreds of beers from around the world. Thorny, you hungry?
Well, I sure am, but don't worry because Shine has you covered, serving La Perea and the famous Garage Soup Shack, Bozeman's favorite for 25 years. From their beautiful rooftop bar and community-driven values, Shine can help make your beer dreams come true. Come enjoy your favorite beer in a sacred place and shine on at Shine Beer Sanctuary in downtown Bozeman.
We're going to start off. Thorny, I'm going to serve it up to you first, buddy.
Well, I do want to say that just because we haven't said what we're drinking doesn't mean we're not drinking those other times.
That's true.
Just throwing it out there. I have a Silver City Panther Lake Porter. It's from Bremerton. It's a big old 1 pint. 6 fluid ounces. I don't know what that is, but it's one of those bigger ones. It's pretty good. I've never had it before. I'm a big fan of porters. It's pretty tasty. I would definitely recommend this one.
Thorny, I got to ask you a question, man. You're hitting a porter and it's almost June. What's going on?
I'm not a believer in seasonal beers. That's what's going on. I'll drink a dark beer in dead summer.
Brooks, what's your call on porters in summer?
Well, big fan, big beer fan. I agree. I do not believe in seasonal beer. I'm a beer consumer kind of across the board. Mid-July, a good imperial stout, even like warmed up a little bit, I'm in. Like, I'm totally in. I usually drink IPA, but a lot of beer, definitely not seasonal.
Yeah. Okay. I'm with you. Stout, summer, it's all good.
Yeah. Fair enough. All right, Brooks, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking a Hub Ferocious IPA. Hub is Hopworks Urban Brewing from Portland. It's a, they call it Blood Orange IPA, but mostly dry West Coast IPA. 16-ounce can, really funny logo. Great beer.
Nice. What kind of hops does it have in it?
I'm not sure the hop profile. I would say more like juicy hops, a little less bitter than most West Coast, but like overall, relatively dry. Not sure nice. The hop profile. Yeah, tasty, man.
You had me at less bitter. I'm not an IPA guy over here, but I can handle them if they're in the 30s in the IBU scale. It's about where maybe 40s.
Yeah, totally. This falls at 50, but IBUs are a little bit ambiguous. You never know. They don't necessarily say how quite bitter. Mostly just...
That is true.
So what I'm drinking tonight, there's a little bit of a backstory behind it. So our local brewery that I've mentioned on the podcast before is Pear Street Brewing, and it's just in proximity, kind of close to my house, right? And so during the COVID-19 time, they've been doing like a Saturday pickup of growlers and what they call crowlers. And if you don't know what a crowler is, it's what they're calling a 32-ounce can. Basically, they just pour the beer in a silver can, and then they top it right there in the brewery. And so just recently, they put out a couple new beers. And one of the things that, Thorny, you probably didn't know about me is I really like Mexican lagers. And they had, they just brewed their own Mexican lager. And so I have a crowler, a 32-ounce can of their Mexican lager. This doesn't have a specific name, but I have to the right of me, I went cut up half of a lime, and so I'm just sipping on that.
The Mexican beers you've been texting me pictures of is basically Miller Lite with a lime in it. So, like, is this a Mexican beer? So I didn't realize you were an actual fan. I thought you were like an ironic fan.
No, no, I've been on the Mexican lager kick for a while now. So, but yeah, I was excited to see Perry Street brew theirs. It's really low alcohol. It's like 4.2% alcohol. It's super sessionable, very good.
Nice. Sounds good.
Right on. All right. Well, let's move into some news. Well, no, I'm going to retract a statement. Let's talk about Brooks for a little bit. Thorny, what do you think about that?
Yeah, why not? He's on. He's our guest. Let's get a little get-to-know Brooks segment going here. Do you want to kick us off?
Sure. Let me take a look at what we got here. So, Brooks, we know that you work for Skyline, and we talked about that in the intro there, but one thing our listeners might not know is that you played safety for the University of Montana. I got a question for you. First question was, who is your coaches?
That's awesome. When I was a freshman, my defensive back coach was Mike Hudson, and the head coach was Bobby Houck, and defensive coordinator was Craig Paulson. That was a fun year. That was 2009. Went undefeated, went to the national championship game, lost to Villanova in Chattanooga, Tennessee. That was a really cool year, really fun. You know, one of the most interesting sports years of my life, kind of just riding this really weird wave of the end of Bobby Houck and also like the peak of kind of what Montana football had become. Had a lot of friends. My brother is 4 years older than me. Had just so many connections at like in the university and with you know, players at the time that were some of his friends, people I knew. So it was just a really fun experience because I had familiarity with the program, even though I didn't get recruited super heavy by them. Recruited way more by Montana State and some other schools in the region. But really cool to be a part of it. Then played for the next year. Robin Flugrad was the head coach, and Mike Bresky came in and was defensive coordinator and the safeties coach. And that was another really unique experience, and probably the one that like paves my football life the most as far as my understanding of football and kind of how I see the game defensively is from Mike Bresky, and got to be with him for about two full years. And just a really interesting guy. You know, he's gone on to be You know, he's been an FBS defensive coordinator several times, led some really interesting teams back before in his career before Montana. So that was super cool and really interesting to be in a defensive coordinator's room all the time. That was kind of a unique, fun experience. And so, yeah, that was kind of my Montana. It lasted about 2.5 years, played, went into third fall camp, just pretty banged up and injured. It had 3 surgeries. But those 3 years were fun and kind of defining a lot of my football life because I had played so many sports before football, especially in high school. You know, it was my primary sport towards due to numbers in a big way, just more opportunities, you know, and played a lot of other sports. But those couple of years at Montana definitely kind of.
So when I was crafting that question, I was really like kind of salivating because, I mean, out of all the people we've interviewed, I mean, I think Travis Lule and Corey Nickel were the only other players that we have interviewed. So I really just kind of wanted to pick your brain a little bit on this. It sounds like you were part of some transitional, I mean, Bobby Hauk left, Flugrad comes in, and then, and you know, whatever happened to Flugrad, but you were part of this kind of turnover on the staff. Like, I guess my question is to you, Brooks, is like, how does that affect the culture of the team? And I mean, you were part of like the Grizz, which is such a like kind of almost has like this mystique behind their culture. So how did that go between coaches?
Yeah, that's probably one of the better questions anyone's asked me about it. Because that is, I mean, that's the most important aspect. And that's what was in a big way lost. And that's what was, if it wasn't lost, it was degraded and it was fumbled a little bit through a different, you know, some different staffs, but yeah, with Flugrad, I mean, it was the scandal. It was players who were having sexual assault cases brought upon them, and it was a big deal. And a lot of those people were, you know, people I was close to, and but the culture was in a way like I mentioned. I mean, it was starting to be degraded just due to such a massive change of philosophy and power. Even if you try to keep the same backbone, like, everything changes so quickly. And I saw, you know, it happened at Montana State. And the next transition between Rob Ash and Jeff Choate, that transition was luckily held on to. And I think that a coach like Robin Flugrad could hold on to it too. But amidst a scandal, then all of a sudden, any link and administration go to the coach at Montana. It was Mick Guy, the guy that read me at Montana, and a great coach, wonderful guy in Montana. You know, he's coached at every different level in Montana, including at Montana State and Montana Western. But super, I'm just a really cool guy. Takes over an interesting program. That's 4 years, and you have a missed generation almost because of 3 coaches in 5 years is what the math works out to. Is really volatile. And, you know, we still, then the Bob Stitt comes next and there's still volatility in the fumbling of the culture. And that culture now is almost, you know, 2 full recruiting classes of seniors away, you know, close to a decade.
So with Bobby Hauk back, do you as Brooks Nuanez see that as like a positive? Do you think he is the right guy right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the position that he's in right now is, you know, he's in a very good position as far as when you exit and have the opportunity to come back, then people don't question if you're leaving again because you're staying. Like, he's staying there for the rest of his life, very, very likely, unless something happens. Yeah. I mean, it's very rare that you would take this step back, not back, but like you would make this move and then try to leverage it to something else. He knows what the FBS is like. It's not what he wants. It's really important. I think Jeff Choate could be in that position. It'll be hard for him if he has a lot of success to turn down a huge job to make a lot of money, especially towards the end of his career. I mean, it's a part of it. You know, these are professions, but he's also in a position of he knows what kind of football he wants to coach. And Bobby Hauk knows that as much as anyone. This is the kind of football he wants to coach. So this is the place to, if he has opportunity, puts him in a position. I don't know if leaving was first by open play. What Mont needs, it's a tough pill to swallow after what they had gone through with scandal that didn't lay on his shoulders by any means, but was such a part of the culture that was around that program. And there's just no way of denying that it's hard to bring him back in that way, but it's completely understandable. And I think, yeah, to answer your question, I think it would be the right move.
Cool.
I mean, it's painful for me to say it as a Bobcat fan, but I think Hauk has it going the right way. And I, it's pretty hard to kind of screw them on football too bad. So, like, if they got sleeping kind of resources, fan bases, facilities, all that kind of stuff, you know, it's going to be good for the Grizz and bad for the rest of the league in that way.
It's facts. Yeah. No, it's facts. He revived it very quickly, and that's because it's always there. It's in the walls, you know, and he just brought it back out. And it is very, very similar to, not peak, but like, it has so many characteristics of what made it great before. So yeah, that part is interesting. What, your sentiments are definitely correct. The league is definitely on alert.
Well, the only thing is now that some teams don't have to play either Montana schools. So they just cruise on right over to that Big Sky Conference Championship.
Right. Yeah, it's crazy.
Don't get me started on that.
So, Brooks, when we met you, it was homecoming in Bozeman this past year. And you were staring down and kind of just standing here mumbling. And you kind of have this clairvoyance of what's going to happen in the next play. And I was just kind of testing you there a little bit. And I was like, damn, you know, he seems to know what's going to come. So, that's good as a photographer. And you're at a game. Like, how are you as a player in order to help capture your photos? And who are you really focusing on?
You know, I have a process of going through and ask and answering a bunch of questions that we need for our back end. You know, our database is just, it's full of so many photos, and it's full of every player that we pretty much cover. There's very few. I always get frustrated if I don't have every player. It happens from time to time, especially young guys, but I work on building profiles of every player, of getting a static still image of the player. Usually standing is just fine. Just the proof that they're alive and their number. And then proof of them warming up or something that's in the context, but on the tertiary, moving a little bit from kind of activity in a one-on-one photo. And the great guys, I have, you know, 10 action photos that I'm would print in a magazine that I'm proud of, you know, the excellent guys, the guys that are all over the ball, the middle linebackers that are making tackles. And so those profiles get full, but then I always think of, and I try to shoot before the snap goes, a player or two of every single snap and get profile pictures of just still players. And then I find the ball and I usually just go down in distance and I look at the running back set. I look at if the running back is on the same side as the tight end, how strong is the set? If the running back's on the same side of the tight end, he has a better chance of releasing with a little bit more space because the tight end's going to clear something out. So like maybe the running back here on 3rd and 7 might get checked down if he's a player. And just kind of think through football and just kind of, I do test myself almost every play and it keeps me engaged and it's fun. And but yeah, a lot of people on the side, there's good foot behind camera. There's a lot of food stuff and origin photos. Right? And always, if six or game, good fun play and plays. Seven, you know, that's always my goal. Touchdowns, big games like Cat Grizz or something. If there's one touchdown, that's the game winner. You have to have that photo. It's really hard to get one photo though. So those are always challenges. Look at it, really fun. The challenges get so much.
I wouldn't have thought the fact someone played, you know, one have and just kind of where the plays go with the camera, to point the camera. That's really interesting. Way to look at it.
Yeah, and there's times, you know, to be honest, where, and I've shot a lot of neutral games where, another thing is that I shoot the other team, so that not a lot of people do that either. We do it because we keep, you know, we try to give the entire picture. We try to give opponents as much respect as we do the teams that we cover the beats. So I shoot the other team throughout the entire game as well, but there's games that I've been where I have never shot the other team. Let's say it's a playoff game against U Albany. I haven't shot that team. I know the quarterback. I get the receiver that's good. But it's really challenging sometimes to look at what they're doing and try to figure it out, especially on the field level. And I feel humbled in those times. But like when I get to talk to Jeff Choate, I'm the one interviewing him. I'm the one asking X's and O's. And he's telling me honest answers. And same with offensive coordinators and defensive coordinators. I have a really good idea of the Big Sky Conference. So I know what teams like to do. And that helps. You know, it's kind of like cheating in a way. But when you know about it, it definitely helps.
Who would you say maybe your specific like team that you really like to photograph?
It's interesting. You know, colors really matter. Color concepts matter. Not just the light of the day, but, you know, teams. Let's say, for instance, I've seen it quite a bit where a team wears a white jersey and white pants, and the other team wears a blue jersey and white pants, and a bunch of white pants running around. Like legs get mixed up. Like photos can get confusing. So every now and then you'll go on the field and you have no idea what the uniforms are going to be. And you'll be like, oh, goodness, this is the best combos. Like, these are great contrasting colors. Well, no one will get mixed up. Those are fun. And like that happens. Like, I really enjoyed shooting 5 or 6 years ago, Eastern Tennessee State, ETSU, their first year in the FCS. They were an independent school with no scholarships. They ended up joining the Big South, I think, and they've been successful. And they've like scaled up, and they had the freshman of the year. The Jerry Rice Award winner was the linebacker. The whole team was freshmen. It was only freshmen. And they came and played the Cats, and they got beat pretty bad. But their uniforms were sweet. I remember it vividly. I'll never forget that team. I ended up like following them just because they were so memorable. But so there's a lot of things that play into it, but there's also some fun parts of just the artistry of the way the teams look, the color, the way guys look are. You know, there's some teams from the South that are so interesting physically, different than mixed guy players. So that's always fun too.
I would have never thought I would hear someone talking about colors on our podcast as far as like what they're looking for or what gets them excited to go to a game or shoot a game. But here we are. But that's pretty cool. All right on. Well, we're going to start moving into kind of the conversation of about MSU football and kind of some bigger topics right now on that. And Thorny, let's go to you.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about you guys. I'm just excited to talk some football. It's been too long. We've done some fun interviews, and but it's just not football. Like nothing like cracking a beer and just talking football about the team you love with a buddy. So first thing I want to ask you, Brooks. You talked a lot about culture and all that, but I'm just kind of curious what were your impressions of the 2019 Bobcat squad? They were a interesting group. Started off slow. Painful to watch sometimes, and yet here we are. They ended up in the semifinals. What were your kind of impressions of that Bobcat squad?
Yeah, I like the way you said it. I mean, they were really, really talented, and they had a really good scheme. I mean, offensively, it took so long, and there was times where it was brutal to watch the growth, and they were beating teams 49-20. You know, I mean, they early on it was odd because the quarterback was still a little bit unnamed, but as Rovig kind of went under center, that team grew. But then when Isaiah Fonseca came back, it was like, oh, wow. If we had Troy and Isaiah and Fonseca, I think that Jeff Choate would be pretty happy with that backfield. And you had glimpses of that, but not particularly. You had one or the other, and both were dominant. And I think you could have both in theory. But defensively, the front seven was as good as it gets. And that's what the whole team is defined on. I mean, they had players in the back end that could make plays that didn't even have to at times because of how dominant the front seven was. Defensive line, linebackers played well. Josh Hill coming back he was a really, really good player last year. Impactful. I mean, for him to get a first team all-conference nod is just like one of the better stories I've ever covered.
And he missed like what, over half, no, less than half season, but right around half of it? I can't remember.
Yeah, right about half, about five games. The season before, he missed at least 4 or 5 games. And yeah, you know, battled a really tough injury. He didn't get invited to fall camp the year before, and like he might have never played again. And he was first team all league. I mean, what, you know, just a testament to that group and that front seven. They were dominant, but they caught a tough draw. I think that there was different draws. They, you know, in the playoffs, they play Illinois State instead of North Dakota State. Illinois State lost 9-3 in the quarters to North Dakota State, and they almost had a pick to seal that thing. Like it was, I watched the whole game. It was close, and I think the Cats matched up really well against Illinois State, but North Dakota State's tough. And you know, the way that they're built, they have no chance without a quarterback. If you don't do something different, if you try to beat North Dakota State at what North Dakota State does, it's just not going to work. So overall, I mean, really good season, really good team. You know, one of the better defenses I've covered in a lot in a, probably since Skyline started. So really good team. I'm not surprised where they ended up. I think, you know, kind of expectations were almost beat. At least met, if not beat.
One thing that you kind of talked about that front seven being so dominant that some of the guys didn't have to do so much. I think Braden Conkle joked about that a couple of times about how he was like almost bored back there a few times. Conkle's kind of a little bit of a trash talker, even in the media. It's kind of funny, but I remember him saying something to that effect. So I could totally see what you're saying there.
Yeah, I think four of their top five tacklers were in the front seven.
It's crazy.
And that's, you know, this is just, and then Conkle was fifth, and it's like, yeah, you know, he would be the leading tackler on most teams, but guys don't get to him, they get tackled.
So, Brooks, do you think the front seven made Kane Ione look better than he actually is?
I get the question for sure. I think yes, but I also think that he's matured. I think some of his coverages have become a little bit tighter. They don't have to blitz as much, which always helps any coordinator. When you blitz when you want to, like when you don't have to blitz because you need a play. You blitz because you have momentum. It's so different. And that's what they had this year. So any coordinator would like that. And it helps coverage. They were able to roll a lot of coverages. But that's Jaquay Allen too. I mean, that's, you know, a really talented player that can cover a lot of field, that covers up a lot of people who maybe can't. I mean, Conkle's great in the deep third, and he's better in the box, you know, and he played a lot of Sam linebacker.
They lost talent
on the back end. Yeah, they're right. Me too.
Yeah, there's one thing you talk about blitzing. Correct me if I'm wrong. The Bobcats very rarely ever ran like a cornerback blitz. That's not something I ever see really the Bobcats do very often. And I could totally, you know, why do you need to send a quarterback if your front seven's just getting to him every single time anyway?
Yeah, there's no gimmick blitzes. We talked about some of the coaches I played for. Mike Bresky was a huge, I call it cowboy, he's a huge corner blitz guy, especially from the boundary. When you're tight on that hash, blitz from the boundary or put a nickel on that in kind of nickel corner on the edge. Those are gimmick blitzes in a way. Yeah, the Cats don't do that at all. They bring linebacker pressure. They'll bring five from time to time, but they can get home with three and four all day. And not even get home. They just create so much pressure. They just collapse the pocket so well. Yeah, 2019, they had a really good team.
Well, it kind of culminated to me when I was watching that front seven in the Austin Peay game. I mean, if you even look at that halftime, it was just ridiculous. Austin Peay might have not even had a first down or maybe one at that. Do you think the Cats can continue to cultivate that kind of pressure in the front seven, or is it something that they might lose with like guys like Derek Marks not being there?
Yeah, I think until you see it, you have to think they take a step back. I really like where Chase Benson has done and the kind of where he's gone, but it'll be a different role for him in a way, even if it's the same position. Guys just haven't proved it like Derek Marks did. You know, he was just such a productive guy. And like I say, not even sack numbers, just it's the eye test. You know, I watched him. You guys watched him. Jeff Choate, people know, like, this guy, doesn't matter his size. At some point, that was out the window because he did gain the size. He was just such a tremendous player. His hands, his feet, really, really talented. And, you know, that kind of stuff will have to be replaced. Will it be? It's hard to say. You know, we'll talk about, you know, there's some transfers and some things that are definitely going to play, but some guys need to take the next step. Some guys that are probably going to be juniors, so that much playing time, like Kyle Finch, that will, you know, hasn't really done it and will have to show that he can. I mean, talented, yeah. Can they do it? You know, you got to do it. You got to prove it.
Well, that's kind of what the sign of a really good deep program is guys not seeing a whole lot of playing time until they're sophomores at best, juniors. That's kind of really what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, and Choate talks about that too. I mean, what do you guys think? Where do you think that the defensive line stands as far as how much do they have in the tank compared to playing time that they necessarily lose? What do both of you think?
It's definitely a concern for me, and at least in terms of like the production. I mean, like you said, I don't see how it can't take a little step back. It doesn't mean it's going to be a big problem or anything, but there's definitely just a lot of guys that are unproven. But I like the combo of Chase Benson, Kyle Finch, and Amandre Williams right there. I mean, that's just a good starting three there. You're not going to go wrong. You just got some young guys like, what was it, Blake Schmidt and a couple guys or other
guys. Sear Deans is going to be a guy that we're going to have to watch for.
Yeah, I wanted to ask your question on, he was one of my guys. I basically, at the end of this, my questions have a list of guys I'm just kind of curious about. He's one of them. Have you seen any sort of flashes from him? Because I remember being kind of excited by him when we signed him, just a small town kid from, like, I think it's Connell, Washington, the little tiny town out here. Just a big body, seemed like a guy who could really produce, but haven't heard much of his name in the couple of years he's been here.
Yeah, I have seen it. You know, he flashed right away. He was one of the more impressive freshmen when he was at fall camp that first year. He had shoulder surgery last year. I think he has exactly what Montana State likes, and, you know, historically, guys that he reminds me of. And, you know, these are like really loose comparisons, but people who get after it, kind of that cowboy mentality, you know, Cale Strybice had a little bit of that.
Yeah.
You know, guys that really, truly, when they get their hand in the dirt, they like kind of just like to get out in a tornado and just be physical. And even if they mess up, their technique's a little broken, like they like the physicality part of it. And that's just him. I mean, he's one of the most physically mature people in his group from day one. And I think he still will be. You could kind of see that he realized very quickly. There's a lot of guys that come in and think they're going to be really physical, and they are, but they realize they're not going to play. And he kind of got that chip, and I could kind of see that it probably demotivated him a little bit. But I mean, overall, the shoulder surgery is what set him back. I think that he'll definitely make noise.
Well, kind of to wrap up the talk on the defensive line and go back to your question, Brooks, for me, like what I think about going into the 2020 season, I think the biggest question I have is who's going to take the leadership role that Derek Marks vacates. And when I listen to like your brother talk and other people, you know, who talk, who are much more knowledgeable than Ryan and I, he was the straw that stirred the drink, right? And he was able to make calls and just be that cerebral presence on the front line there that just got everybody motivated and got everybody in position is what I continue to hear. So I'm really interested if, you know, Amondre Williams could step into that role, or, you know, is it Benson, or is Benson a vocal guy? I haven't heard that. So that's the biggest question I have.
Yeah, definitely. Benson's definitely not a vocal guy. He's definitely one of the more unique, you've seen football players and humans like him. He's a wonderful kid. He's very unique. Definitely not. I think that he is a great leader in that room as far as the way he plays. You know, people want to follow that. You know, he definitely leads by example. But it's Amondre Williams, and if you remember, you know, he was a very highly recruited for a potential player of the year in Washington. Mm-hmm. You'd have to check that very highly recruited quarterback in high school. And, you know, I think he does hold some of those qualities. And I think that he'll walk right into it because he's a very good football player. He might be the best guy that they return, honestly. Mm. Depends on where Troy is. If not, I mean, he's right there. Isaiah Fonse is that good, and Lewis Kidd is that good. But Amondre is, I think, a real player. I mean, he showed flashes of it last year. He was still getting comfortable. But I think as this becomes his team, his defense, which I think it will be, he's definitely the alpha as far as, you know, the talent and the presence goes. It's definitely him.
He definitely just kind of got better and better as the year went on. And really the last four or five games is like, all right, this is all conference caliber stuff right here.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He was a dominant player.
So let's shift our conversation a little bit. Let's talk about the quarterback position and specifically the quarterback battle. One of the questions we had for you is, do you agree with Choate's decision to bring in an upperclassman transfer to compete for the job, knowing that Tarkarovic's been kind of a... It seems like when we've shown confidence in Rovic, he's really, you know, risen to the occasion and he's made some strides. And so then when we bring in Matt McKay, it's kind of a question mark for Ryan and I. What do you think on that?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with it, but... You know, if I'm going to be completely honest, you know, I think that Rovig is a good player. I think he could be a very productive player at any school, including Montana State. I think that when you know the landscape of the FCS like Choate does, and you know the enemy to the east, when you know that North Dakota State is right there, Rovig's probably not good enough to win you a national championship. And could he be? You know, I still think that the jury's out, which is a good thing for him. It's a question mark on his resume, but at least it exists. You know, I do think that the jury is still a little bit out. He's never had the full reins, and he's never had the confidence of everyone. Like, he just hasn't. So what Choate is doing, and I think it's probably the right move, is like, we gotta go. We gotta have a top 25 quarterback in the country. We probably can't have a barely top 100. I think that's probably where he's never afraid to go get people that can play. And whether that's Bryce Sterk, whether that's, you know, other dropdowns he's had, some transfers that have played extensively, it's just part of FCS football. So I think that's probably where they're at. And if, you know, if Matt McKay doesn't win, then that's a good thing for Rovig. And if he does, then, you know, you hope Rovig stays. I don't know if he would. It would seem that in this day and age that if he lost this battle, he'd probably go.
Well, I just want to, you said something that's interesting about him not ever really having the full reins necessarily. He's also never really had this full stable of MSU running backs either to kind of take that load off of him. Like you're talking about, like Troy Anderson and Isaiah Nfonzi in the backfield at the same time. It's not going to take a real superstar quarterback to win with that system in place right there. So I think he can be like a good game manager type quarterback. I don't know if he's a national championship caliber quarterback yet, but he's still pretty young. He's only had, what, 8-9 games as a starter. He didn't even start the first. I can't remember when he took over for Casey Bauman, but he hasn't had a full total season playing yet. So he's still got some room, and I saw him grow every year. So, or every game, excuse me. So it was interesting to us just to see a guy brought in, but I see what you're saying. Like you got to go. You got to get a quarterback who can take this to the next level. And I'm also really interested to see what Justin Udy does with a guy like Rovig too. That's a whole new curveball in this whole equation.
Yeah. And that'll be hard to, you know, I think that will be an unknown, which it's just what we've been doing for the last 5 years is having unknowns, whether it's head coaches or new OCs. And, you know, there's just a lot of, in those first couple games, we're going to see stuff we've never seen from Justin Udy and the quarterbacks. And at this point, I think we damn well know that there's going to be more than one quarterback that plays and takes snaps. I think that's just what they're going to do. And so I don't think that anyone's out as far as that case goes. We could see them split snaps. You know, if it's Rovig and McKay, you don't know. You just don't know. It's up for grabs with Choate.
I do want to ask you, before I move on to the question about Choate's recruiting philosophy, I'm curious, do you think there's ever going to be a year where we're not talking about Montana State quarterbacks, plural?
As of now, I mean, you know, since Denarius McGee, it hasn't happened. So, you know, Prukop definitely had it locked, and then he hurt his knee, and then, you know, poor Jake Bleskin had to play against the Idaho State in the Grizz. Yeah, that was. It's just, I know. I really respect Jake. It's a tough draw.
I've never felt as bad for a single player as I did for Jake Bleskin in that Cactus game.
Yeah, there was not a whole lot you could get done there. That was tough. So they haven't had a lack of it's not even controversy. Choate just lets it ride. You know, like his favorite quote is, we have 16 quarterbacks on this team, or we have 19 former quarterbacks. It's like, yeah. And then he plays guys that have never played quarterback at quarterback. He plays guys that used to be quarterbacks starting for Oregon, or, you know, he just does anything he wants. So I think, no, to answer your question, I just believe in history and it's proven.
Is the controversy just created by people like us talking about it and Jeff Choate's like, whatever, I know what I'm doing?
No. I don't know. I don't know if he knows what he's doing with quarterbacks. I think that there's some pieces of what he thinks of. If you don't land a five-star, if you don't land a dude, then you better have a really good team. So he just focuses on the really good team and just hopes he gets a dude. He just hasn't. You know, sometimes that's just bad luck.
It's been quite the QB roller coaster. I don't remember the exact, you know, how it went now, but, you know, Prukop was supposed to come back for a senior year. Chris Murray, the whole academic thing. I mean, I think Chris Murray, as a junior and senior, would have been a better option than anybody the Cats had when Murray would have been a junior and senior. So it's hard to say. Like, he had some bad luck thrown in there, but definitely tired of talking about Choate and quarterbacks, that's for sure.
Yeah, I am too. I mean, the team is so good. You've seen teams win without him. At this level, it's a little bit harder because there's only about 120 FBS schools in the country. I think it's even less than that. And, you know, there's more than 120 good quarterbacks. And most guys in the FBS, if they don't start, they transfer. So that means that the FCS, the top 70 guys are like real deal dudes, just real deal. And if you don't have one, it's tough because they're really good and they're way better than the competition. And the quarterback is so different at this level than like the middle linebacker. It's just it's a higher level. You know, teams with good quarterbacks, well, we've all seen it. I mean, they're tough to compete with at this level. So you better be damn good. And that's just what Choate focuses on. He doesn't know quarterback as well as he knows football. So he just does football. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with that. I want to ask you a quick question real quick here about the recruiting philosophy. There's been some turnover in Jeff Choate's tenure, and maybe that's just the nature of college football now. But do you think Jeff Choate recruits kind of in anticipation of this roster turnover, or is there roster turnover because of the way Jeff Choate recruits?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think that there's a tiny bit of both, but mostly when he talks about it, he brings guys here that he knows might not fit. When they don't fit, he's the first to say, go ahead, you should probably go. And not even because he doesn't want them, but if they're like, coach, I have a question, like I'm questioning this, I think he's just kind of like, yeah, you should do something different. If you're questioning this, we don't really want you. So he does he talks about it extensively. He does oversign. He does recruit positions that the style of player just might not fit within a culture where you don't play till you're a junior. That's how cornerback is. That's how quarterback is. They're very similar. You want a bunch of tape. You want to play for 4 years. It's kind of like the culture of those positions. So he does, in a way, anticipate some of it. And I think it's smart. It's also kind of brutal to hear. You know, it just reminds you about the business of what this whole thing is. And he doesn't treat people as commodities, but he does understand the business. And, you know, he's very honest about it. That's one of his best qualities, is he's very transparent. I mean, he talks about it quite openly. So, you know, it's hard to not agree with. It's just a certain way of it's a certain philosophy. And that, you know, that's his. He definitely oversigns and tries to bring in talent, and he'll weed out the stuff that he doesn't like very quickly.
Do you agree with that philosophy? I'm just kind of curious your take on it.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that if you really understand the way that the non-scholarship walk-on players work in the FCS, like you have guys that get invited to camp that are preferred walk-ons, and you get guys that then once camp's over, you get to extend your roster from 90 to 110, I believe. So you get to add 20 guys that like they showed up for school, and like they show up to a practice where guys have been there for 3 years and they've been at fall camp and spring ball, and they've been a part of like this this very accountable program. And you show up and it's like tryouts. Like you just show up and you're just like on this team. They invited you. You played high school football, but you show up and you have no fucking idea what to do. You're just running around being a practice dummy. Just no idea. Choate lets those kind of guys have pride in the program. He includes them. Not every program does. You know, like when I was around Montana, those kind of guys, like, did you get to be a part of the program? Definitely. It's not the same as with Choate. He includes them in a different way. So you can kind of like, he is able to carry such a big roster because he has 10 guys that want to come that he has on the line that are trying to be a part of the 120, not even part of the 90. He has guys that if he called up, if someone like leaves, quits, three guys, he has guys that he's been recruiting that are just going to Montana State. Maybe they play lacrosse or so, like guys that just go to school. He knows their names and he has them ready, and he's brought guys to camp or to practice where you're like, who's that guy? Oh, new guy, this name. And he just, so that part of it, like, do I agree with like the health of it for kids and stuff? I mean, it's a business. We all know that. The kids should know that too. Their parents should know that too. But does he do it vindictively? No. And does he bring in guys right away and keep the program healthy? Yes. So do I agree with it? It's not how I would do it, but I think he does that philosophy correctly.
It's good insight right there, Brooks. So kind of to wrap this Montana State in 2019 into 2020, and just in your opinion, what did they have to do? What's their next steps?
You know, just getting confidence on offense. And they've had so much running the ball. And, you know, when they throw it just a little bit, we've seen them pound teams. You know, defensively, they have an identity. Their run fit, the culture of just how they get to the football is already intact. Like, it's not plug and play, mm-hmm. but they have a lot of guys that are able to be a participant in that style. You know, if you're willing, you can play. Offensively, they want to be creative, and they've always shown that, especially with some of their formations, but they just need to have, there's been a hint of, and maybe it's us, like you say, is it us talking about it? Is it just 100 people who sit around and talk about it? Maybe it is, but there's been an inherent lack of confidence at times. Just mm-hmm. with the play clock, with timeouts, using timeouts towards the end of half, towards the end of games, there's been a little lack of confidence offensively. If it gets tight and Choate wants to be involved on the headset, on the mics, you can tell that there is some pressure. There's something going on there. It's not being forced, but they definitely don't have confidence in the entire playbook at times. And that's the next step. It's probably quarterback. You know, it honestly, if it had to be anything, it'd probably be everyone's confidence in the quarterback, no matter who that is.
Well, I do have a couple more questions. Not question necessarily, but we're talking a little bit about the roster. I just want to know a little bit about your thoughts about some guys you've seen in camp. One of the ones we talked about earlier, Sir Dines. I hope I'm saying his name right.
Danes.
Is it Danes? Yeah. I feel like I get them mixed up how it should be, like Sir Dines or Sire Danes or whatever.
But, right.
A couple guys I have questions about. I think other Bobcat fans have too. Do you think Luke May is ever going to get some playing time, or is he just not developing?
Yeah, just physically not. It's hard to say. I don't want to say this because it's like he's a crazy athlete. Like, he's an awesome athlete. He's not athletic enough. That's just his size. Like, he's not very big, and his quick, like, you know, in a telephone booth, like those movements and those tackles, like in space when he does get close. He's good. I mean, he's a functional player, but overall, he's just not athletic enough, not rangy enough. Doesn't get his hips around quick enough. Doesn't accelerate quite fast enough. And just for being like, he has to play like almost in the box, strong safety, and he's just not quite big enough. Even though he does want to be physical, so I mean, he's a good player. He should graduate. I mean, he should ride it out because he's had an interesting, fun career. Guys like that matter, but I don't see him playing a ton. Special teams, he can play a kickoff for sure. You know, he's a special teams guy that can play. He gets it.
Yeah, and there was just some general excitement when he decided to transfer back, and I think he was deciding between the Grizz and the Bobcats, if I remember correctly, and I think he ended up going to the Bobcats, but this doesn't seem like he's ever going to see you crack the playing time, I guess.
He came and played quarterback. You know, I covered him for a full
that's right, ball that's camp, right. I forgot he came back to play quarterback.
And then when he switched, he was just a little bit behind. You know, he's only played safety in college for a year and a half. Like, it's just, yeah, he's just doesn't have a ton of experience.
Another guy I'm kind of curious about the development of, he's going to start seeing some playing time. There's been some talk since he signed with wide receiver James Campbell, 6'1", 176 wide receiver from Florida. What do you make of him?
I love him. He's one of their most athletic players, honestly. I mean, he's just kind of turned into like the new, how would I say this? He's a really good special teams player. He's kind of a special teams dynamo. You know, I think when he was healthy last year, he was probably their best special teams player. That's been Chad Canoe at times. Luke May has played pretty, like we mentioned, pretty well on special teams, but there's been some guys, but James Washington's definitely their best special teams player. Receiver wise, he's got the speed. He's just never been able to really crisp up route running, and they don't throw. He's the kind of receiver that doesn't really fit into their offense. He's not like their only deep threats they've really had are Lance McCutcheon, a little bit of Travis Johnson in the last 2 years, which is crazy. But like, they want guys that are physical that can catch the ball around the line of scrimmage, and that's just not him. And he's not really a slot, he's just a Z. And it's just, they don't really utilize that position very much. So he's just kind of in a weird spot. He'll play a ton. I think he broke his hand last year. No, maybe it's, I can't remember. Don't quote me on that. It might be his foot. But he definitely broke a bone and was out for the last 7 games, or 8 games.
I was hoping maybe he'd be kind of like that, fill that role of that wide receiver from NDSU, whose name is escaping me right now. I can't remember his name, but I guess maybe that's a Tyrone Marshall. It would be maybe where that kind of that role.
Right, and Willie Patterson kind of is that role too. Like, they just like guys that are just quicker in space, less vertical speed. Like, he's just kind of a downfield guy. They just don't use it, you know? They just don't.
What do you think about what's the deal with Keaton Anderson? He was a Montana kid, if I remember right, out of Billings. Is he on the roster or not?
He left the team, so yeah, okay. He's done. Kind of was expected. You know, he got hurt and just never could really find the groove. It happens, you know. It definitely, it's not an easy thing. He's definitely not an outlier. That is, it's pretty darn common. You know, we don't see a ton at Montana schools. We do, but it's really common. You know, just kind of his experience, year and a half, got hurt, is what it is.
Another guy we were curious about is Jahari Martin, freshman out of Florida. Mm-hmm. What do you see him as, a running back or a linebacker?
He's got to play linebacker. I mean, he's just going to keep getting bigger and stronger. I mean, during their winter conditioning, he was, you know, I heard some stuff about him being just, you know, one of the top 5 lifters in the program, putting up some crazy numbers, especially bench. You know, he's a huge bench presser. He's the kind of guy that I think you just bulk up. He can get to the ball. You know, I think last year when you're not going to play linebacker, like, he just wasn't going to play. He wasn't ready, like, not fundamental wise. I mean, some fundamentals, physicality wise, he's ready. Fundamental wise, a little bit off, a little bit behind, just needs to needs to grow a little bit. And also just, you know, it's a different scheme. It's a brand new, it's a complex game, especially the college game. He just wasn't going to play, and it was not the deepest group. He just wasn't going to play. So I think they chose the kind of guy, you just move him to running back to keep him interested. Like, well, you're not going to play. Like, here's the ball. Go truck some people, I guess, you know? I mean, I think you just try to keep a guy like him from leaving. You're just like, well, we're willing to do anything we can to get you on the field. So, like, just try to, you know, keep him involved, I guess. That's what I thought. I think that he'll play linebacker in his future.
I mean, definitely played a fair amount of running back in high school. So it's not like it's a new thing for him, but I could totally see your point about just keeping him engaged and involved. Maybe for this year, maybe even half of this year, but definitely next year, moving him to that linebacker room and getting him going over there.
Yeah, he's a physical player. I mean, he's a beast. He's short. He's definitely short. You know, I get to stand next to every single dude, not only in practice, but like on during game days and stuff. And they have cleats on, they have helmets on, and I know exactly how tall I am. And there's dudes who are really big. And then there's some guys that are really, really tiny. And I think that people get that, but there's some small dudes. Like you mentioned Willie Patterson, like small, like really small. Jahari Martin, really big, you know, but short, like really like 5'9".
Yeah.
So you're saying listed at 6 foot, a little generous?
Like when they say 5'10", it's like, dude, this guy, he's like 5'8½", like 240. Yeah, this dude's big. Yeah,
I'm pretty sure I took it off the roster. I think it says 6 foot.
Yeah. Goodness.
We'll give him 5'11". He's 5'11".
Only one last player I want to ask you about specifically, not his status or what's up with him. Just how much do you enjoy watching RJ Fitzgerald just destroy people?
Oh, God. Yeah, he's physical. It was super physical. He puts his head, he gets his hat on a hat. You know, coaches like to say that. Like he makes sure and touch you in every way. He's just so compound, just so miserable to go against. You haven't seen a lot of guys like that. So compact, so tough. Like, yeah, they should play him. You know, he should be, if they're going to just run the freaking triple option, like have this guy block, let's do it.
Yeah. They kind of are disguising it a little bit. We do kind of run the triple option, don't we?
Yeah. I mean, at least 15 or 20 plays a game when there's not a quarterback on the field.
I tried to call it the ground raid, but I don't think that really caught on.
I love it, man. I know. You just know it's coming. It's great.
RJ Fitzgerald kind of reminds me, his high school tape in particular. Who is that? I want to say he was from Arizona, the white running back, the Grizz had like 6 or 7 years ago.
Well, there's two that were really, really big like that.
Bowling
Dan,
ball guy.
Dan Moore.
It was Dan Moore.
And then Joey Counts right after that. Yeah, Dan Moore was, if anyone really knows Dan Moore, or like you've seen him, he was the guy in college at times 10 that I tackled the most, the person that I had to go against the
most.
How'd
that feel?
It was, you know, I only lasted 3 years, remember, 2½. So you could, I would attribute a lot of it to him. I had 2 surgeries because of him.
I remember I remember watching him play, and his stiff arms are borderline punches.
Yeah, dude, he's so physical and so big. So big. The best lifter I've ever known. You know, he went into powerlifting after he played for the Colts for a while. He still is. He's still a professional bodybuilder.
Holy cow, I didn't know that. That's cool. All right, Brooks, we're getting close to it. We got one more question, and then we're going to head into the buy or sell. Quick question for you. Who do you think is primed for a breakout year, both offense and defense? We're going to put you on the spot, make you pick 2 players.
Yeah, I would say defensively, I'm really interested in the Jeffrey Manning kid, the safety from Oregon State. I really liked his film. I think that his body and kind of the way he plays, at least I've only seen 2 kind of cut up games. Not a huge guy, kind of that Jaquae Allen build where when you read the stats, they are big guys, you know, kind of like that 6'1", 195. Which is bigger than you might think, but I just like the physicality. I liked kind of the way he played. I think it really fits into what they do, so I'm super interested in him. And offensively, it would probably be a receiver. You know, we kind of know what the running backs are going to be as far as breakouts go, or, you know, someone who's going to take a big step forward. I've always thought Lance McCutcheon is talented, and I think that, you know, if you give him true down-the-field touches, like, you never know. I mean, there was times where he was just, he had like seven catches and four touchdowns. Like, he's a guy that I think you can kind of open the field up with, and you can kind of, if you get him going in some fashion. But there's some other receivers that can play too. They're going to give Willie Patterson chances. You know, we all think, and I agree, you know, there's definitely hasn't shown a whole ton. They're going to give him chances. I mean, I think that he'll probably be, someone's going to take over that Kevin Cassis role, and he's definitely in that mix. But there's also, you know, probably my favorite player on offense who I think will take the biggest jump is Zach Redd. I think he's just a really, really good player. And I think that now that he has all this experience, he's still young. He's just so powerful and technical, and he's just a really good player at center. He can play guard. He can play both sides. I've talked to him so much. He's just such a smart kid. Like, I think he's really, really, really talented. And I think he'll take a big jump too. So he's more of a guy that's a little bit more established, if you know about that offensive line. But I think that he's going to go from, you know, we'd love to talk Madden ratings. I think he's going to go from like an 85 to a 93. And that's a big jump.
That reminds me, you mentioned Jeffrey Manning, the transfer from Oregon State. We didn't even get around to talking about the other transfers real quick here. I know we're going to get out of here soon, but I kind of want to see what your take is on some of the transfers. We got John Clark, grad transfer from UW, 6'4", 290, defensive tackle, I assume. Cole Sain, Riverside Community College, by way of Montana. Got 3 years left to play, 6'4", 280, offensive lineman. I'm not sure which position he is on the line. Do you know that one, Brooks? Which position he's?
I think he's inside, I would say.
Okay. Ben Seymour, College of Canyons, who is a 6'2", 245 defensive end. I think a pass rushing is what they've been bringing him in for. And this is going to be hard for me to say. Is it Chacho Yula?
Yeah, I think that's right.
He's got 1 year left, which I'm interested to see how that works. But he's 6'6", 200 pound safety, I believe, right? I didn't write down his position.
Safety, yep.
From Arizona. And then, of course, Jeffrey Manning from Oregon State. I'm curious, did you see Cole Sain very much in Montana, in Missoula?
I do. And I guess I would like to retract that. I would say he's a right tackle. I do know who he is. And I have seen him, you know, not a ton. I don't have a great evaluation on him. I think it's a good get, you know, clearly someone that produced at junior college. But they, you know, Jeff Choate said this week they wanted to get old and stay old on the offensive line. And I think this is kind of that move, like insert someone in and bolster a class without having to necessarily do all the development. So it's a little bit of a depth move, which is always smart. That's what, like we mentioned, his philosophy is to, you know, get big groups at O-line, defensive back, and clearly quarterback.
So you would say, I guess, Jeffrey Manning is the guy you're most excited about in that class there then?
Yeah, I mean, the Arizona kid, because we're going to all struggle with his name until I have it written down and read it a million times. I mean, he has a little bit of production. He comes from a great background. Centennial High School is, you know, super competitive. Vontaze Burfict went there. Ronnie Hillman went there. Corona, California, it's really competitive high school football. And to go and produce at Arizona, I mean, you know, they've had some okay teams, but his film was interesting. Again, a different level of aggression just that you kind of garner from practicing at that level. So I think it's a good get. You know, it's the biggest position that they lose is safety. They lost three seniors, you know, Jaquay Allen, Braden Conkle, and JoJo Henderson. They played for the last five games. They played those three guys 75% of the time at the same time. You know, they brought Conkle up to that like nickel linebacker, and they played Jaquay and JoJo a lot in those last five games, a ton. You know, they always were playing, especially after first down. And so all three of those guys being gone, those two safeties, you have to assume like they're going to rely on. So I'm very interested in those guys. And, you know, the linemen are all kind of depth guys, but the Clark kid, you know, John Clark, the pipeline continues. We always, you know, we talk about it internally. Well, is Jeff Choate just going to get a UW defensive lineman every single year? Like, probably not. It's like, well, I mean, we'll see. He's batting 100% right now. You know, and this kid, the pictures, he's a dude. He's big. You know, he's FBS looking. And that really helps. If you can mix it up and let Benson go in a different position, you know, maybe move Benson more towards that Marks position at like inside instead of just right on top. And a little bit more one-on-one with the guard instead of getting double teamed like Benson did in that nose tackle does in that defense. You put Clark, you put Benson over where Marks was and let him use his athleticism, let this Clark kid take those double teams. I mean, it could definitely open up a new element for Benson, which is a huge key to that defense. So they're all interesting, you know, but I would definitely say that Manning was the guy that I kind of thought had the most interesting film. He looked more plug and play than got to kind of see with these other guys.
Well, it's pretty interesting because we are talking about a little bit about the defensive line and the holes left with the players vacating their graduating. Safety is going to be just the biggest one for me because like JoJo is such an underrated player. Like he was such a good player and such an important part of that back end on the defense that it's going to be really hard to replace all three of those guys. Just three senior stud players like that. It's going to be a challenge for the Bobcats.
Yeah, it is. And that defense, you know, it's that it was a relationship that truly fed off of each other between that front seven last year and the back end. You can't have that front seven unless you have that back end, but it's vice versa. It's the same thing. Yeah. Doesn't matter how good you are at front. If you can get the ball chucked down the field on you, like things become very different and challenging. So like you, to have anything that front seven has, you have to have security up top. And, you know, I think throughout Canine's defenses, it's not just because he played so, you know, primarily safety and defensive back in his career, but, you know, people reflect what they know in football. And it's such a big part of his defenses, even if they're focused on the pressure in the buck end and the odd man front and the bogus pressure. And even if that's the focus, that back end is still where his mind is going to kind of see it. And so you have to think that those guys are going to be really integral. And they always have been in the Big Sky. Safety is one of the most important positions. It's not close. And that's not the case in leagues around the country. But it is in the Big Sky. And some of the greatest players in Big Sky Conference history are safeties. And it's for a reason. Because just the style of offense and the style of coaching is definitely a certain way. And it's majorly important. And like I said, the Manning kid, I think they're both interesting players, especially FBS guys. The thing that helps with the Arizona kid is he only has 1 year, where I think Manning has two. It's the way I understand it. So the Arizona kid could be quite focused, which is very helpful. You know, that's very like, you know, then you can become plug and play because you're not developmental. But both those guys, I think, know what they're coming into.
Well, I think to kind of build on your point a little bit is going into Montana State right now, like Jeff Choate has established his culture. It's not like year one, year two, where they were just taking everybody and kind of just seeing what sticks on the wall. It's like, well, if you're not going to fit into the culture, it's, man, well, we'll see you later. They're like, thanks for coming, but here's the door. So I think these guys that Jeff Choate's bringing in probably know that, and it's going to play out just like that. So hopefully he's done pretty good job with these senior level upperclassmen recruits, drop downs. I'm looking forward to seeing what they can produce on the field.
Yeah, minus the two UW guys that came out, Gardenshire and
That was like year one though.
I'm just saying, like, that's kind of what we were talking about, like kind of just having to take some guys to fill some roles and some, you just need some guys and took some chances. And you know, out beyond that, he's been pretty much batting 1,000.
Yeah, but so Choate even admittedly said, you know, I made a mistake on those guys and I learned from that though.
Yeah, he got lucky there. That's a tough spot to be in. Famous kid, drug scandal, never really, nothing happened. You know, I don't think anything should have. I'm not saying that at all, but that's definitely, you know, count your blessings.
It was almost more newsworthy when he signed
than
got in a little bit of trouble there.
Yeah, and I'm all for, like, keeping kids' lives intact and, you know, like, hey, it's time for you to go. You know, I mean, like, I believe that's the way it should be done, certainly. But that was, you know, yeah. You always miss. Transfers are risky. You know, they definitely have ulterior motives than a kid signing with you out of high school. It's a whole different world.
Now, that's why I give guys like Jacquay Allen and even Bo Sandlund so much credit. They came in and they basically had to sit out a year, or they paid their way for the first year, or, you know, they just went to school. Whatever it was, if they were on scholarship or not, they weren't really with the team. So by the time they got to play for their senior year, they just maximized it. And, you know, those are the kind of guys you kind of want.
Yeah, and it does happen. You know, I would say it's transfers are kind of 50%. And it's not that they'll fail. It's just that the 50% hit, you know, it's just kind of, I think that's a pretty good percentage. You know, I think they actually do work out quite a bit. But when they don't work out, it's kind of ugly, just because usually it's a quick exit, or it's a, a verbal exit. You know, it doesn't work out that great, but yeah, you got to go for him at this level. You have so much attrition with small rosters. You have to get transfers, and a mix of FBS dropdowns and junior college guys, I think in this day and age, is exactly what you'd want.
Right on, Brooks. Well, we're ready to move on to the buy or sell segment of our show, which is, are you familiar with the buy or sell?
Yeah, I definitely understand it.
okay. I'm in. I had to explain it to Bethany Cordell the other day, and I didn't know if I had to do the same for you. All right.
Before we move on, I just want to say, man, this has been fun talking with you. I could talk for hours and hours more here, but yeah, we gotta start wrapping this up, unfortunately. But yeah, I appreciate you coming on. It's just been a lot of fun talking.
Oh yeah, thank you guys too. It's been great, man. Love talking shop. It's like you guys mentioned, it's been too long. You know, we've been away from sports, and we're all hurting for it. You know, this is my life. So not just Bobcat sports, but all sports. So it's been great talking with you guys.
Well, thanks, buddy. All right. I got four questions for you on buy or sell, and you just got to give a buy or sell and what you think about this. So first mm-hmm. one is kind of playing off The Last Dance, and we know that you are a big MJ fan. And so my question to you, buy or sell, Brooks, the next docuseries should be on Tiger Woods.
Buy. Absolutely. I love that. There's some people that have been talking about Kobe Bryant, and well, that doesn't work because he can't talk, because unfortunately, one of our favorite players is not here. So when you think down the line, it is Tiger Woods. You know, there's a Lance Armstrong 30 for 30 coming out in early June. Now there's three 30 for 30s coming out, but one is called Lance. And the intro mm-hmm. says, it's him saying, I'm going to tell you the story from my perspective and what I remember. And I think it's a very similar concept of he gets to write his own documentary. The Last Dance has been interesting because there's not much to critique, but there is a critique of knowing that Michael Jordan said yes or no to every bit of footage. Did he have last say? Who knows? But this was such, he had his hand so much in this that you'd think that he's going to, you know, try to control some of the narrative. It would be the same with Lance Armstrong, but I buy that. Tiger Woods would be absolutely phenomenal. What a story. One of my favorite athletes of all time. You know, tough off the course stuff, but I'm in, but I buy all day.
Just you're not buying curious. My vote of Danny Ainge. The untold story of Danny Ainge.
No. Thorny, just be quiet for a moment. Brooks, just curious, man. What's been your favorite moment in The Last Dance?
Yeah, the last 2 minutes of episode 8 was probably the most powerful documentary stuff I've, you know, recency bias, but I've ever seen. You know, Jordan talking about why he's competitive and what people thought of him, and you know, how he wanted to remind us that he doesn't care what you think of him and there's a reason, and winning is a sacrifice. And I like how he followed it up with that leadership is also a sacrifice. And, you know, that was definitely my favorite part. There's times early on where I know so much about this, you know, this team and this stuff and Michael Jordan. I know a lot about him. I have watched just every documentary, every piece of footage. I have it all sitting 10 feet from me on DVDs. I've seen it. So there was times early on where I'm like, oh, Dennis Rodman, let's watch some Michael Jordan. Scottie Pippen, let's watch some Michael Jordan. So now that they've gotten into Jordan stuff, I've been into this definitely. 6, 7, 8 have been great.
Right on, man. I actually had that quote typed out in the document that we're looking at right now. And I was going to ask you a question. You just talked about it right there. That's great. All right. Buy or sell. Jeff Choate's biggest coaching flaw is his ability to manage the quarterback position.
Man, I would say sell that. Just because I think his biggest flaw is putting pressure on offensive coordinators, especially in the first half of games. Being too conservative culturally on offense to make games close. They want to fight you and drag you into deep water and then drown you. And most coaches would say, if you're talented, you got to separate. You know, it's like driving on a highway. The safest place is to separate. You know, don't drive next to someone. Get away from them. And he doesn't do that very well. And I think that it's easy to blame him because I think that offensive coordinators, it may not be him, but it's him on Thursdays. It's him on Tuesdays. And I think that his sentiment is correct in being conservative with the defense that they have. And look at him. I mean, I won't fault him for a thing they did last year because it was so successful and they won a lot of games and they beat people down. But I think that that would probably be the biggest flaw. It's not necessarily the quarterback, because by the system, they don't need the quarterback. And I don't know if I agree with that, but in their system, they truly might not. They should sometimes, but not always. So in a sense, he has to let it go sometimes and, you know, let that thing open up a little bit. And I think they'd be in safer positions to like start blitzing more, to get home more, to play defense a different way. Philosophically, it's not what they do, but I would say that that is more of their, his weakness is, their weakness is being too conservative in the first half on off.
Well, we can't just let that go without talking a little bit about that. That's of kind course, of a, yeah. a big topic there. I know Foley's probably got something to say here, but I'm just kind of curious. Do you think Jeff Choate drove out Matt Miller, or did he just take a good opportunity for Matt Miller?
Both. But yeah, I think it would be hard to be the OC for Choate. I mean, I'll leave it at that. I think it's been proven, you know.
Well, Courtney Messingham's pretty much exhibit A.
Right. Yeah, it's I saw it at times. These guys who like to play defense and guys who like to be physical, there's an element of mistakes in the passing game that they don't like. They want to mitigate mistakes. And in the passing game, if you throw it, you'll throw picks. Like Rovig threw, what, 6 picks last year? Maybe 7.
Unless you're Trey Lance.
Right. Trey Lance should have thrown a pick in that Illinois State game. A guy had it and literally fumbled it 3 times. It was ridiculous. But guys throw picks. And like as Choate, if they throw 7 picks, he's stoked. If he would have a hard time throwing 18 picks versus getting another 25 touchdowns. But he would have a hard time with it. And it's just kind of part of, not that someone throws 18 picks, but it's just a part of the game. It's much more volatile. And he doesn't like that. So, I mean, I think that that's probably just what plays into it the most.
I think when you broke down, I think I did the research on this and I can't remember exactly, but like Rovig's interception to passing ratio was like top 4 or 5 in the league. And same with his like efficiency, it ended up getting pretty high up there. So, I mean, clearly something Choate values, but obviously his, you know, big playability or his touchdowns were pretty much bomb in the league. So, you know, he had some positives in that and some things I'm sure Jeff Choate did like that he did.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And, you know, he saw that, he sees the field fairly well. And, you know, when things are flowing and he can get in a little bit of hurry up and, you know, they're running the ball well, he was an efficient quarterback. You know, he really was. And if he had the game in hand, there was nothing that they really couldn't do. I thought that they were, a very good offense. But, you know, the expectations at the Montana schools, we talk about it at Skyline Sports every single day, is that we, sometimes we're like, are we being too hard on these people? On these, you know, we always remember their kids. Are we being too hard on these young athletes? The expectations here are national championships at Montana and Montana State. So that's the lens you have to look at it. Is Rovig an efficient quarterback? Yes. Is there stuff that he does that Choate likes? Yes, absolutely. Can he win a national championship? I think Jeff Choate answered that. You know, I think that we know what he thinks about that.
I think that's going to be the evolution of Jeff Choate, is his ability to work with the offensive side of the ball. And I'm really kind of interested going forward in the season, how him and Justin Udy kind of marriage. So
it does feel from our perspective, at least my perspective, that has gotten better over his tenure, but not still a long ways to go, but certainly better than it was when Courtney Messingham was here or even Bob Cole. Things have gotten a little better. Is that right?
Yeah,
is he getting a little better?
They have. I mean, he's got experience. He hasn't done it, you know. He's not that old of a guy. And he had only coached defensive football. I mean, he coached a lot of offense in high school. And he knows football. He knows offense. You know, he would talk circles around all of us. And that's just the facts of it. You know, it's how you see it live during the game from the sideline. How you, like, guys who know it, they're savants. They can see it in a million angles just from standing there, like, the film you watched, you've been in the booth before. Like, he has attributes that he just hasn't done it that much. And at this level, I think that, you know, early on when he said he wanted to be about toughness, well, after about 2 or 3 years, like, it's hard to change from that. And toughness doesn't always involve quarterbacks. You know, when we talk about toughness in college football, it's option teams, you know, it's a different style of team and it doesn't rely on the quarterback, and it does exist in college football, and they're doing it, you know. That's what they've been doing.
So we were in the middle of a buy or sell, I believe.
Yeah. We'll get back to it. Only 2 more questions for you, Brooks.
Great stuff. This is a fun conversation, but we're
yeah, I'm ready. All right. Fire away.
Buy or sell Brooks, Daniel Hardy, all conference linebacker.
Sell. Just lack of volume, probably. Just too many good players around him. Won't get the tackle numbers. Sell.
Do you think he's all conference caliber?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the thing is that he's either going to, you know, to be an all conference player at what they're going to have him do a lot, he'd probably have to have 10 sacks. And that's just a lot. You know, they haven't had a guy like that for a while.
Yeah. Good
point. If he gets six, like he could be definitely, you know, a second team all league guy. Does he make it on that list? Yes. When I think of all league, I think of the first team. And if you want to say when they name honorable mentions all the way down with offensive linemen, I mean, you got to think offensive lineman wise, they name 22 guys. Like if you're in the top 22 in a 13 team league, like, okay, yeah, that's good. But if you're in the top three, like you're, you know, a transcending player, there's just so many guys that make it, you know, on all those big lists. Is he a top two or top four linebacker at his position? He has the caliber. I don't know if he is. He hasn't played a lot of football, to be honest.
Well, we all know that MSU and UM tally tackles a little bit differently on the stat sheets.
Yeah, every school does it a little different.
Rumor has it Dante Olsen is still gaining tackles as we speak.
He had a ton of them, you know. His sample size, it depends when you saw that guy. It's pretty funny what people
think. Quick note on Dante Olsen. So I got to stand next to him in Spokane at the Big Sky press release. He was the most intimidating person I've ever stood next to.
He's just a big guy.
Yeah, just really impressive. All right, Brooks, last one, buddy. By yourself, getting paid for your name, image, or likeness as a college athlete.
Oh, it's so hard. I want to buy futures, but I don't want to buy now. But I think it's a slippery slope to not buy, if that makes sense. So I would probably buy. I don't like that. Like I say, I'd like to let it play out longer. I don't want it to be today. It's too muddy. The landscape right now is really muddy. I think there's several things that they could do. It's kind of across sports. The fact that they're all different. Football guys, you risk so much by having to be in college. You have to be in college for 3 years. And like the chance of getting hurt is just so high. Whereas like college basketball guys, they might play 10 games and sit out and then go to the NBA. So like those differences as far as so what I'm getting at is that there's sports where you have to play longer and you have a much higher risk. I think that there's value in making money off your likeness if you're able to. You know, I just don't think it lasts that long. The transition to being a pro is just pretty low. There's so many kids that play football. Teams are huge. We're not just talking football, but other sports, I think it would make sense. I mean, I don't love it. I wish it wasn't a thing, but if I have to buy, I'm pro player almost always. I'm across the board. I see how much these institutions, these coaches, they benefit financially from kids who risk a lot. So at the end of that, I'd be pro player, even though I don't like that.
Do you think that, real quick sub question here, and Foley's going to hate me for this. Do you think that that's a benefit, an advantage for the Montana schools who actually some businesses might actually want to give them a little decent chunk of change to advertise, Fremo's Pizza? Is Fremo's still around Missoula? I don't know, but
random. I don't think it is.
A random
God,
business.
That buffet hurts.
It's terrible, but I ate the crap out of it. Anyway, do you think that benefits a school like Montana State, who have some local businesses who might actually invest in that versus like Southern Utah?
Absolutely, and it already does. You know, you can take this same model of fully benefited scholarships, you know, the cost of attendance that we see across the country, that right now, North Dakota State and South Dakota State, Jeff Tope preaches it all the time, is a disadvantage. They offer full cost of attendance. That's $3,300 a year in your pocket, cash money. It's very similar as if you have more financial opportunity, when you're getting recruited, the coach will tell you that. And that's seedy. That's tough. You know, that starts to become such different motives for going to different areas, you know, and the money that comes in, it's hard, especially in basketball. If like you have the number one pick and he's making $1 million or whatever, you know, like how does anyone respect him? The kids don't have nothing, you know, this guy's making tons of money. It's like, it'd be really, I don't like anything about it. I really don't.
Yeah. I mean, it's just so hard for me to say.
What do you guys say?
They deserve, I mean, if institutions are making so much money off of them, they deserve to be able to make some money doing stuff like that. Yeah, it's just so hard. Like, you sell jerseys with the number on it. It's obviously the player. they don't make a penny off that. So it's so tough, and I don't have a good opinion on it really. But I kind of agree with you. I almost always end up siding with the player in these kinds of situations because ultimately the whole thing is built on them.
I think players should get, if you're Troy Andersen and you're doing a card dealership ad, good for you. You get paid. But it's going to muddy the waters. It's going to change things. I'm never a huge fan of change, but that's just me. So I listened to Jeff Choate talk about it today. He's concerned about it. I would tend to agree with him. I don't know. It's you know, if you're like, I guess I think back to like people like Tim Tebow and like transcendent college players, like how much they would benefit from this. But I don't know. When you have to look at it holistically as a university as well. Like, what about like women's golf and stuff like this? I don't know. It's just, it seems odd. So
yeah, fair enough.
All right.
Well, that I think is going to finally wrap up our buy or sell segment, perhaps the longest buy or sell segment we've had, especially with only 4 questions. So,
yep.
Yeah, it's still fun. Brooks, why don't you tell us a little bit about where people can find you, your work, Skyline Sports, whatever, you know, they can find what you do for the Big Sky Athletics.
Yeah. So, skylinesportsmt.com. It's a website that we've modified several times. It's continued to grow. There's premium content, there's free content, there's so many videos and podcasts. You know, we try to podcast more than once a week, but we do a lot of the interviews that we do both at ESPN Radio 102.9 in FM in Missoula, as well as interviews that we do personally. We cut so many of those up after we use them in stories. We even launch them before we even use them because the quotes are just, they're so memorable afterwards, even embedded in written content. So, the site is full of photos. It's full of all sorts of different stuff. We'd love for people to subscribe and support. And we also, you know, as I mentioned, offer a ton of free content. So there you can find me on Twitter at Brooks Nuanez, N-U-A-N-E-Z, and Brooks with an S, Brooks Nuanez. And hit me up if you ever need anything. I've always talked about in this next fall, we really looked at doing a, you know, publishing a bunch of photography from the site, in canvas settings, in metal artwork, in glass. You know, I have done it for my family and my friends my whole career, but I haven't sold a ton of photos to the public just because we like premium members to, you know, after they jump through a paywall, see a bunch of really cool, unique stuff that not everyone's getting to see. So we find it a value add. So we try to protect that for our users a ton. But I plan on selling some this fall. And, you know, I'll let you guys know and I'll update you with something in the future as far as websites and stuff go. But if anyone's ever interested in content like that, you can contact me through the website. And I'm more than willing to, you know, give quotes and print historical photos. And it's been really fun to work on. So that'll be something coming in the future.
Well, that's awesome to hear. And I want to just throw out here, too, like I've been a subscriber to Skyline since pretty much day one. So I really love the content and I love what you guys do, you and your brother, Coulter.
Yeah, thank you very much. Absolutely. Yeah, I appreciate that, guys. It's, you know, it's always great to hear when someone gets to read and listen, and you know, we care about it a whole ton and put a whole lot of work into it. So thanks for the support.
All right. Well, I don't know if you'll be game for this, but we end our podcast with the Go Cats. Foley. I'll start with Foley.
He's a Grizz player.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. If he doesn't want to do it, he can say Go Grizz, or he can just be silent.
I plead the fifth.
All right. That works. Go Cats.
Go Cats.